Attention all groups. This is Admiral Akbar with your Armada advice. If you are going to be running a tournament, it would be a good idea to make note of any players that are using the Blockade Run objective in their list. Blockade Run turns the normal Armada game sideways, meaning that both players are going to need access to the opposite long edge of the board. Many tournaments are organized with rows of tables, with as many as three Armada games being played side by side by side, so if you have a reminder in your notes, you can be sure to put the potential blockade runners on the ends. That way, the players don't have to walk all the way around from the middle to get to the opposing edge, and their game will run faster. Assume attack coordinates, and may the Force be with you.
At last we will deal with these rebel scum. You may fire when ready.
Welcome, Commanders, to the 21st episode of Fire When Ready, a Star Wars Armada podcast. I'm Jim. It's been a while since the last episode, an occurrence I'm hoping not to repeat for a while. A lot has happened since our last show. There was a sudden move of house, and the packing up and moving and unpacking took a lot of time I'd normally put into the show. Then there was the Vancouver Regionals, and since the move, my usual recording spaces have been shrinking, going away, being too noisy, so now is the first time that I've had a really good opportunity to record. But overshadowing of that was the loss of our princess, our general, Carrie Fisher. You may not know this, but I am also the Jim behind the blog Famous People Hate Me on Tumblr. In that capacity, I had the opportunity to meet Ms. Fisher at Rose City Comic Con last year. Just before getting my picture with her, Gary Fisher, her canine companion, hopped off the chair next to her and knocked one of her shoes off. She started to get down to get it, but my girlfriend sprang forward and said, "Allow me." As she put the shoe back onto Miss Fisher's foot, Carrie yelled at the photographer, "Take the picture! Take the picture!" So in addition to the one I got for the blog, she gave us one that just plain tickled her fancy, apparently. I just want to say one last thing about her. On screen, she was an inspiration, but her struggles off screen should be no less inspiring. Dealing with her childhood and her struggles with mental illness should be examples of hope and courage for everyone. Celebrate her role, but remember the extraordinary woman behind it. And maybe watch her hilarious turn in her single episode on 30 Rock, too. I've noticed an uptick recently in Leia Organa appearing in memes as a figure of defiance or motivation, a symbol of things to fight for. And I'd just like to say, 2016 struck her down, but she has become more powerful than you could possibly imagine. And of course, whether it's Leia or Carrie, to me, she is royalty. Rest in peace, Ms. Fisher. Another thing that's happened is I decided to give the Around the Table group a chance to test some of the new objectives before they came out in the Corellian conflict. I gave them general fleet building guidelines like, you might want to emphasize maneuverability for this week, and then gave cryptic clues about what they might be playing by giving the new objectives holiday-themed names. The player with the lower bid had the choice of being first player in one mission or second player in another, but again, didn't know for sure which of the new objectives they'd be playing. The first week was either Storms Over the North Pole, which was actually navigational hazards, and Shoot Down That Sleigh, which was planetary ion cannon. The following week, we did Rudolph with His Saber So Bright, Solar Corona, and Get Chewie Home for Life Day, Blockade Run. Simple things like this bring a spark back to playing Armada every week by making the game mysterious and exciting again. Since we only have time for one game a week, and when the next wave hasn't come out yet, things can get a little stale. Now we have the Corellian conflict to run when that happens, but that can be a chore to set up teams for and can take several weeks to finish. Easy events like this spice things up and make Armada fresh, so get creative with your group and have some fun. So, the flotillas. Since they're very similar, I'm going to do their upgrades together, then talk tactics separately. The flotillas, being the GR-75 for the Rebels and the Gazanti for the Imperials, were the biggest game-changers of the last wave. In addition to being squadron support ships, they were very cheap activations. I've talked about having activation advantage before when I discussed the DEMSU list, and this is ramped up for that style of play. With cheaper activations, you can delay deployment beyond your opponent even more, use them to delay activating ships that you want to shoot with for later when your opponent's ships have moved closer, or just have more activations at the end of the turn when your opponent can't react. One thing that you can do is put your commander onto a flotilla, what is called a lifeboat by some. They're fairly survivable at long range, so keeping them away from the fight to preserve your leader's ability can work really well. You have to watch out for fast ships working as interceptors, and you lose out on the other abilities that flotillas might have, but it does keep that 20 to 30 points of commander off the ships that are going to be in the thick of the fighting. On the other hand, once you get close to those flotillas, it only takes one accuracy and four damage to wipe them out. There's three main builds that you can do with flotillas, and the best upgrades depend on which you're rolling with. The way to differentiate between them is what you've picked for the fleet support slot. You can still run without that slot filled, like on a lifeboat you're going to be keeping way away from the action, but mainly the strength of the flotilla is in that slot. Now, there's no one admiral that flotillas work better with. Yes, Mon Mothma or Mahdi will give them more benefits than a Garm or a Screed, but what they do synergizes with the fleet itself, not the commander. A word of caution before we begin. Flotillas are pretty easy to destroy once they get close, so be cautious about putting a lot of high point upgrades on them. Keeping them lean will keep easy points out of your opponent's hands, as well as make them slightly less desirable as targets, as while they're easier to kill at close range, you still need to get an accuracy to lock that scatter, or the whole barrage is for naught. Of course, you can also take the other tack. You can make them more expensive to make them more enticing targets, to attempt to draw fire away from your larger frontline ships. The first build is the most common. Squadron support. This will likely have the Bomber Command Center upgrade, or, rarely, the jamming field. Its purpose is self-evident in the name. This flotilla will be close to where the squadrons are to make them better. I want to talk for a moment about jamming field. Since this upgrade affects your own squadrons as well as enemy ones, this can be a very difficult upgrade to justify. I haven't done a lot of testing with it, but here's my theories so far. First, you can mitigate it with a combination of activation order and possibly boosted comms to get your squadron activations done before the transport gets into jamming range. The downside to this is that after that alpha strike, it's probably going to affect everything in that scrum afterwards. So if that first hit is all you need, great. If not, you might be in for a long fight. Secondly, you can take it with squadrons that mostly have four attack dice. That way, you'll ideally drop opponents to two or one die while you're still hitting fairly hard. This is easy to do with Rebels and X-Wings. With Imperials, it can get pretty pricey. Flight controllers can help with both of those strategies, putting your fighters back to normal while others are more affected, but it feels like a wasted amount of points to me. I would rather take either those or the jamming field. Thirdly, you can just not care. If you're running a Rimer Ball with intel, for example, throw a jamming field on top of them. They won't be able to attack, but then they don't hit hard against squadrons anyway. Use Mauler and Soontir to deal out damage against enemy fighters and focus 100% on attacking ships. Finally, I'm not a big fan of Z95s. I think that yes, they're cheap, but red dice are notoriously fickle. So they have the minimal staying power of a TIE fighter without the semi-reliable damage output. However, I think an argument could be made for a jamming field Z95 speed bump. Two reds aren't that much worse than three reds, and you might be able to soak a disproportionate amount of damage and lock down squadrons longer than their point cost would ever deserve. In the officer slot, you'll obviously prefer squadron-oriented upgrades like Adar Talon and Admiral Shirano, or generics like the Wing Commander, Flight Commander, or Weapons Liaison. Torrin Farr or Ramus Antilles also work well for this build. The offensive retrofit is also kind of obvious. Boosted comms will let you stay further from the fight, keeping your flotilla at its best defensive range, while expanded hangars will put it closer than you might like, but gives it that excellent third squadron activation. Rapid launch bays might be a good fit as well, but until a ruling comes down in an FAQ about how exactly it's supposed to work, I don't know if I can recommend it. Titles for this build are Vector for Imperials and Bright Hope for the Rebels. Vector should give your intel and escort ships enough of a boost to get wherever they need to go, while Bright Hope will make sure your bomber command sticks around just a bit longer. The second build is just about as straightforward, the Slicer Tool build. You should be able to guess what the fleet support upgrade is, and the other upgrades are focused on extra speed or maneuverability to get it into range, or for survivability since, by necessity, it'll be closer than is comfortable for a flotilla. You'll want to run this one especially cheap, so that you won't lose too many points if it's destroyed. For officers, you can mostly leave this slot empty, since you are going to want to keep things really cheap. However, cheaper officers that have a blanket or a one-time effect are good to put on here. Admiral Titus is a prime example, and Leia Organa is good as well, since a Slicer flotilla isn't beholden to any one command. Ahsoka Tano is another good one, as is a chart officer to offset one of the big vulnerabilities of the flotilla, direct damage from overlapping. Finally, I recommend Director Isard on this build for Imperials, as you can check to see where you can do the most damage with the Slicer tool. Along with this, a little reminder about Slicer tools. You don't get to look at what the dial is before you change it. This isn't a huge thing, but it's the difference between seeing what your opponent's strategy for that ship is and just trying to pick a command that you think will hose them. Again, this is where those cheap 3 points for Director Isard pay for themselves. The offensive retrofit slot is one that doesn't have very good options for this build, though if your local meta is squadron heavy, you might consider some quad laser turrets for defense. The title to look at for Imperials is Suppressor. Since you're going to be in close anyway, you should wreak as much havoc as possible. Either Rebel title is good, Bright Hope to try to keep it alive longer, and Quantum Storm to either get that last bit of distance on the way in or on the way out. The final build is a fleet support one, just like the slot. It will have a comms net or repair crews typically, but you might see one with jamming field from time to time. These flotillas stay behind or otherwise away from the main combat, and contribute by adding flexibility or resilience to the other ships. The officer slot can once again be left empty, and once again benefits from cheaper one-off or supporting upgrades. However, Leia isn't a good choice here, as both Comsnet and repair crews need specific orders to work, so you can easily run into a situation where you want to Leia a squadron command to one ship, but need to have an engineering to remove a damage card, as an example. There aren't really any offensive retrofits that are good for this build, so I'm just going to skip it other than to say an argument could be made for certain lists to have tractor beams, but in general, just save the points. For titles, neither Imperial one is a great choice. You're ideally not going to be close enough for Suppressor, and not running squadrons to make Vector worth it. Once again, either Rebel title will have its uses. Bright Hope for survival, Quantum Storm to make sure your flotilla is in range to use its support ability next turn, or you can run without too. A couple of points is a couple of points. Finally, one last word about the lifeboat build. With the advent of relay into our fleets, having your admiral on one and keeping it back from the fight still allows you to throw squadron orders as long as you have relay fighters out in the thick of things. Imperials get an added bonus to this, not just from having Relay 2 on their shuttles, but that the Vector title still works through Relay to get that sweet speed boost. Now, let's talk about how to fly them. For the Rebels, first of all, I'd like to say that in general, you shouldn't take the combat version. If you've got some tricky strategy in mind, like running opening salvo, or you have designs on maximizing Sato attacks, by all means, go for it. Otherwise, the non-shooty transport option is the cheapest 2-squadron activations in the game, and you should leverage that like crazy. Given the heavy emphasis on squadrons with Rebels, Taking two of these, each with Bomber Command, is a great choice for a fighter-heavy list. Rebel transports fly just like CR-90s, with a max speed of 3, so they're highly maneuverable. I find that as long as they have even a nav token and they aren't in the middle of a traffic jam, they can get themselves out of trouble fairly regularly. Ideally, they're not in any trouble to begin with. Typically, my transports are either slow rolling towards where the squadron mess is going to be, or moving at some speed, but behind larger ships that they're there to support. This keeps them far enough away from the action to make them less juicy targets, but close enough to do the job they're there to do. If you're running a slicer tool build that needs to be in close, take advantage of that double click at the end to either keep Bright Hope's front and sides towards your opponent, or angle Quantum Storm to either escape to a longer range or get into range for the tools to do their work. In general, I like to hold a nav token on them for an extra burst or slowdown when needed. You may want a squadron token on a transport used to activate fighters, but even when I'm running a squadron transport, I still prefer a nav token to keep my options open so that I can activate squadrons and still change speed. Rebel transports aren't going to deal out damage, but they do tons of work in whatever build you field them as. They're the cheapest squadron activation in the game, as well as bulking out a fleet for activation advantage to be able to flummox your opponent in both deployment and flexibility of activations during your turn. On the Imperial side, Gazantes aren't as maneuverable as their Rebel counterparts. They do get to shoot regularly, though, so even if you might not use that a bunch, it's pretty good. The tactics are much like those for Rebel ships, either slow roll or keep them on the other side of the fight. However, where the Rebel transport's main concern in maneuvering is trying to avoid fire, since the Gazanti has actual armament, you might focus more on getting arcs set up against other ships. A single blue or red die isn't going to do much, but just like squadrons, those single dice add up, and getting the Gazanti set for a double arc even more so. That ability costs points, though, and I know many Imperial players who really wish they had an option for a cheap, unarmed transport like the GR-75. I say, if you're going to pay for it, you should use it. Unless the Gazanti is obstructed by the ships it's trying to assist, you should be firing with it, either to force the question of whether to spend a defense token against a single point of damage, or to absorb the hit. As to what variant to take, I'd again go cheaper. The red die variant has 3 results that won't do anything for you, while the blue only has 2, and when you're relying on a single die for output, you should go for reliability. Plus, they're potentially still a throwaway ship, so you want them as points efficient as possible. That said, maybe you want to go opening salvo with a bunch of red die versions, in which case, go nuts! For tokens, either a nav or concentrate fire is good, depending on what you think you'll need more of, speed changes or shooting. Honestly, the Gazanti isn't nimble enough that a nav token will do a lot for it, so I'd lead and concentrate to make sure that one time you roll accuracy, you get a chance to correct it. One note on the suppressor title, since it's only at distance 1 to 3, you shouldn't put it on a flotilla that's going to be kept out of the fight. And since 1 to 3 means at maximum medium range, your Gazanti is going to be in the hurt zone where it can't mitigate incoming fire as much due to the lessened impact of an evade token. Also, the title goes off when enemy ships end their activation, so it should be one of the first to activate if it's not already in range, or no enemy ships will be affected. That will also put them at a closer range for the ships that have yet to activate, so again, danger zone. The title's effect will make it a target as well, so make the most of it while it lasts. Hopefully, it lasts for several shots, because the more hits it takes, the less the rest of your fleet is taking. Gazantes have the same general strengths and weaknesses as the GR-75, but they trade maneuvers for guns. Play to that, and otherwise you should run them the same. You'll just want to make sure that they aren't obstructed, whereas with the GR-75, what does it matter? You're not going to get as many of the Gazantes, but hopefully you're going to nickel and dime opponents in addition to their awesome fleet support effects. That's it for this episode. Next time, I'm going to do a wrap-up of the Vancouver BC Regionals, and chat about how the Corellian conflict campaign we're starting is going. Plus, maybe do a couple of thoughts on the new Wave 6 promo that they just released. After that one, then it's on to the Liberty and the Interdictor, where hopefully I'll have a guest to help out. Until then, you worry about those fighters, and I'll worry about the tower. Admiral?
It's a wrap!
Fire When Ready, a Star Wars Armada podcast, can be found at www.firewhenreadypodcast.com. Talk to me online on Twitter as @ArmadaJim or by email at jim@firewhenreadypodcast.com. All celebrity voices impersonated, all rights to the spoken content of this podcast are reserved.